can you communicate, do you think, with ghost spirits?
I do believe you can, and I think movies have ruined it, and most people think that seances and Ouija boards are the way to do it. Absolutely not. I mean, I think spirits communicate through images, through imagination is one of the biggest thing, and also through dreams. A lot of people get most of their information through dreams. So I think there is a communication there, not the way I'm speaking to you. I think that because they're spirits, they no longer have that human body, so they can't communicate in the same way.
So the ghosts needn't be malevolent because they have that sort of impression of being sort of spooky and quite sort of menacing. They needn't be.
In 4 years that I've had the team, and in the 9 years I've been in, you know, studying parapsychology, I've never come across a violent or even scary or spooky ghost. Never.
Is that a little bit disappointing at all?
Yeah, I think because, you know, growing up seeing the movies and everything, you kind of expect, you know, I do. I think it's kind of funny, though, because I kind of went into it expecting a little bit more Ghostbusters and less kind of a poltergeist, you know.
What are the other misconceptions about ghosts?
The misconception is that a ghost can physically harm you. The truth is, the majority of the time people get hurt, not from the spirit manifesting, but by running away from the spirit, possibly tripping over things, bumping into doors. The fear that's generated of the unknown is why people perceive spirits as spooky, not because spirits actually are.
Now, some of the things that you've got on your paranormal-nyc.com website, photography, some classic old photographs where images are there, the people were not there when the photograph was taken. Does that still happen, and how has it changed with digital photography? Does it still happen with digital photographs?
I don't think it makes really a difference anymore. I used to think that when I first started, I didn't really trust digital photography because I kind of felt like, well, of the old school of it has to be 35 millimeter, I don't trust it. I need to know that the film can't be altered. I like having that negative to know this is the right picture. And so if there's an error in film, it's easy to figure it out because of your negative. And then after a while, I realized that, you know, investigation after investigation, and you're using 35 millimeter and you have to get it developed, and you're talking about $20 a roll, and then you're going through these, you know, 50 pictures, and there's absolutely nothing in any of them, that, you know what, I have to find an alternative to this. We're a nonprofit. We don't make any money, so we can't, you know, it's hard to spend so much money on film also. I did research into it, and I found out the truth is any camera over a 5.0 megapixel camera won't have the dropouts of a 3.2 or anything lower than 5.0. And for what we do, anything over 5.0 is actually recommended. So 5.0 cameras are just as good as a 35 millimeter. The only thing, again, I still feel like you can manipulate a digital photo. I feel like with Photoshop, anybody could put anything in a photo these days. But the good news is there's actually a program out there that you could actually scan photos to see if they've been altered at all, including digital photos. So we use that to see also.
Tell us some of the most vivid experiences that you've had in your investigations.
I think there's actually been probably two or three that really stand out. The very first one was, this was, I think, early 2005. We did an investigation in upstate New York, actually. And I was downstairs talking to the client, and two of my investigators were up on the third floor. And they were leaving a room, and all of a sudden they heard something drop. And they turned around, they looked on the floor, and they saw a penny sitting right in the middle of the floor. One of my investigators walked up, just grabbed the penny, said, "That's weird. This had to be what fell, because it wasn't there before." So he just picked up the penny, and then he put it up on the dresser, and he walked away. As they're walking out the room, they hear something fall again. They turn around, and in the exact same spot as the penny was this little pin of a frog in the same spot. So he walked over, picked up the pin, and be like, "Okay, well, that's a weird coincidence. It fell out of the same spot." Center of the room, so they look up, and there's only a ceiling above them. So, I mean, they're thinking in their head, stuff is falling out of the ceiling. You start thinking of poltergeist. So immediately they run downstairs and they tell me, they said, "You know, Dom, there's these things are falling out of the ceiling." I was like, "Okay." So I grab my tripod and my camera and I bring it up and I'm setting up the camera and I hit record and I'm like zooming in and I zoomed out because I wanted to get the whole room. And I, you know, I'm looking through the viewfinder with my right eye and I'm looking at the room with my left eye, just to make sure everything is focused okay. And then all of a sudden I see this image and I felt something cold go through me. And then I felt it walk past me, walk to the end of the room, turn left and disappear into the wall. And I'm looking in my viewfinder with the other eye and I see it in the camera too. And so this is bizarre because, and so first I didn't say anything because I thought, I was like, what is this? And about maybe, I'd say 10 seconds later, I see an image walk from one side of the room, walk across the room and disappear into the other wall. This now, I speak up. I said, is anybody else seeing this? And there were two investigators behind me and I'm telling them, I just saw something twice now walk past. And then I'm asking my investigators behind me to jump up and down and make sure they're not causing this. There was no light on behind in the hallway either. And there was no explanation for it. Nobody caused it.
So they saw it as well?
They didn't see it at the time it happened because no one else was looking in the room but me. They did see it afterwards because not only did I see it with my eye, but I also recorded it with my camera. I actually have this footage. So now, this is our proof of what I saw with my eye and plus what I recorded on video. So it wasn't something that we just got on video or I just saw with my eye. So that was, and the funny thing about it is when we approached the client about it, and she said, we always get the feeling that there's people in walking in and out of our room. And without realizing it, this was facing the back of her house. And I said, I'm kind of curious, like, is there anything else? Was this house built on anything? And she's like, no, but, you know, with the cemetery out back. And we were like, what? And so we looked out the back window. Now, in that room, there's a cemetery right out her window. And to me, it always confused me because I never know why, like, spirits would want to hang out in a cemetery, but maybe that's their only connection.
Were you able to do anything about it, or did the client want you to do anything about it, or was it more just reassurance that they weren't nuts?
I think they were happy that, you know, somebody else had witnessed something that they had felt for such a long time. Ironically enough, it was the woman who felt it and her husband didn't believe in any of it, so he never saw any of it. The video footage didn't really change his mind either. He was like, oh, there's got to be another explanation for it. We gave her the video footage and she loved it. She thought that was, like, ideal.
That's, I suppose, ultimately the final crux, isn't it? That there's no cast iron, black and white, sure thing that these things do exist. There's always that evidence that is nearly there but not quite there. Presumably your ultimate goal is to find the ultimate truth.
Exactly. I kind of feel that there's always this thing where no matter what type of evidence you collect, people are going to tear it apart. You're going to get skeptics. You're going to have people thinking you altered it even if you didn't. We also did an investigation in a music studio in Long Island City, Queens. And I was in a soundproof room at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I had my little voice recorder with me, and I'm asking questions. Is anybody here? What's your name? And then I say, would you like us to help you? And then I keep talking, and I don't hear anything as I'm doing this. I get home that night. I'm listening to my recorder, and I hear, is anybody here? What's your name? And I don't hear anything. And I say, would you like us to help you? All of a sudden, I hear a child crying clearly on this recording that wasn't there when I was in the room. Brand new tape and in a soundproof room. Everybody always asks me, well, you know, maybe there was a woman outside. Yeah, there could have been a woman outside, but a soundproof room, you're not going to hear her. Again, no explanation of why this child was crying. I did research into the studio and found out it was a garment factory. Many years, probably back in the 60s and prior, and that the only thing I could find, I could never find proof of who the child was, but I know that women used to bring their children to work sometimes when they couldn't find babysitters. Another one was Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia. We actually set up a recorder in a prison cell. These are all abandoned prison cells. It's now a museum. And we placed it underneath the toilet bowl, and then we left the camera at the beginning of the row, just so we made sure no one would walk up and down while we're recording. And again, same type of thing. You know, we weren't even asking questions. We just left. We actually went to a different part of the prison. We knew where everybody was. And later on in the day when we're packing up our equipment, we're looking through, and we recorded this digitally so we could just plug it right into the computer and find out what it is. All of a sudden, we see these spikes, like three or four of them. And so we're thinking somebody walked up the aisle. So immediately, I go through the film, and I check, and nobody had walked up the aisle the entire time we were recording. And also, we listen to the clips, and then all of a sudden, we hear, my house. Somebody say, my house. And then, like, 10 seconds later, somebody says, home. And then another 5 seconds, my home. And that was it. So, my house, my home. Three different things in 1 minute. And again, a prison cell where nobody else was. And there was no way sound could have traveled into it because the prison cell itself, we did tests where we walked up and down trying to see if we could hear our footsteps. And when we got within 15 feet of the cell, we heard footsteps. But there were no footsteps on the other recording.
So, finally, Don, for you, there's no question of doubt.
No, there's still a question of doubt. I think there'll always be a question of doubt because I think the ultimate goal is to have completely undeniable proof. I feel like, yes, there's been three or four times that I've experienced something that I believe are completely paranormal, but there's still a part of me that I think wants something more. But I'm leaning more towards a believer than a skeptic.
Don Villela, founder of Paranormal Investigation of New York, thank you for your time. Keep on, dare I say it, ghostbusting.
Thank you very much.